Avenue for Wednesday, April 18th, 2007, will come to order. Today, we expect to have a major hearing on beer and wine taxes. We are going to open an information meeting, and we're also going to open House Bill 2347, House Bill 2731, House Bill 3421, and House Bill 3255. So I'm noticing I'm opening all of the bills set for hearing today except House Bill 3045, which is on a different subject. With that, Mazen, would you give us the bill summaries, and then we'll proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've put the matrix of the different bills again on one page for your convenience.
And I think just a quick summary so that we can get on with the witnesses would be good. Thank you.
House Bill 2347, Mr. Chair, increases both beer and wine tax. It establishes also a new mental health and substance abuse fund that is a non-general fund dedication. 2352-56 does the same thing, but also leaves it blank. However, it makes a 25% mental health allocation and 75% state police account. The House Bill 3421 increases up to $12.40 per barrel on beer over five-year increments. It dedicates 20% to mental health, alcoholism, and drug services, going to county services, and 80% to state police account. And finally, House Bill 3255 increases beer tax by an unidentified amount and establishes a fund for the state hospital finance, which will be dedicated to paying bonds in building the new state mental health facilities.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes.
Quick question of Mazen. In HB 3421, what does not in 404020 mean?
I'm sorry, what's not?
What does that mean in your notes?
Oh.
Well, the economies. Economistees.
No, this is actually more legal lingo, but it's trying to summarize the whole statute in one. This is the distribution between the counties and the DHS. They have 40-40-20 distribution of alcoholism fund. This, just to indicate that it is outside that formula, it goes to counties.
Got it.
Outside that.
Got
distribution
it. Got
formula.
Now I get it. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to let you know about the organization of the meeting today. We have a large number of witnesses. I think there are more people in the hearing room today than I've seen in some time. So I'm going to ask people to cover their main points with dispatch. If you have written testimony, we appreciate it. We would ask people not to read their written testimony, but simply to hit the high points so that we can actually get through our list. It is my intention to allow the last 10 minutes. The committee will meet for an hour and 40 minutes today. We will be adjourning at 10 minutes to 3. I will allow the last 10 minutes of the hearing time to hear House Bill 3045, so that we will be closing the hearing on the beer and wine taxes at 20 minutes to 3. So that's clear. We have very little time, and we'll ask people to move us right along. And with that, Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Revenue Committee. I'm Senator Rod Monroe, District 24. 30 years ago, I sat on your committee, and I was here the last time the beer tax was increased. I was about the age of Ben Cannon at that time, maybe a little older. Since that time, Oregon has gone steadily down the road to where we now have the lowest beer tax in the nation, approximately 4 cents, not per bottle, per six-pack. And I think it's time that we look at that possible revenue source. But I'd like to limit the way you look at it. We have a crisis in this state, a developing crisis, in that we have half as many state troopers as we had, less than half as many as we had in 1979, when the legislature, with my strong objection, took state troopers out of the highway fund. I always thought it was reasonable to use a bit of highway money to pay for those who patrol our highways. Seemed logical to me. But that decision was made. It was an omnibus decision, and I don't think it's going to be changed. If we don't find a dedicated revenue source for state troopers, I think the next time the economy turns down, even if we fund 100 more this year, because we have some money, the next time the economy turns down, they will once again be pitted against K-12, higher education, human resources, prison needs, and so on, and state troopers will suffer. At a time when many counties are cutting down on the number of sheriffs that they're able to fund because of timber tax receipts and other reasons, at a time when crime, especially meth-related crime, is at an all-time high and growing, we need to restore state troopers to the level they were at 25 years ago, at least. The population of this state has increased about 40% during that time, while our state troopers have been cut in half. So it makes sense to me to mesh those two. Now, I fully sympathize with those people who want to see an increase in beer and wine tax for human resource needs, for treatment, and so on. I served 20 years on the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI, and so I think I understand the need for treatment and so on. But the great crisis right now is to fund state troopers with a dedicated fund. And if you do that through a modest increase in beer tax, then that would free up general fund revenue, which could help boost those human resource needs that are also perhaps underfunded. The crisis is with state troopers. That's where you should put your money. The fear I have, and I could support any kind of a bill that you come up with, and I'm on the Senate Revenue Committee, and I'll help shepherd it over there, whatever you do. But the fear I have is that if you hang everything on this bill, if you try to solve all of our human resource problems and the state trooper problems, all with the same bill, that it'll die of its own weight. If you make a Christmas tree bill, it'll have a hard time getting 36 and 18. And that troubles me. So deal with the worst problem, the greatest crisis, which right now is state troopers, and deal with it directly through a dedicated increase in the beer tax. Now, you're also going to hear from the microbrewery people, and they're good people, and they're innovative, and they've built an incredible industry in this state. And they will say that this tax will hurt them. I think they're wrong, because their product is more expensive per bottle than Bud, Miller, and Coors. And if you put a tax on that is so many cents per bottle or so many cents per volume, it actually falls less on the microbreweries per value as a percentage of the cost, falls less on them than it does on those big out-of-state brewers. Here we are, you know, a state that really has no major brewing industry with the lowest beer tax in the nation and a crying need for state troopers. I hope you'll take my words to advice and deal with that, and I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and hear from Representative Esquivel, and then we'll have questions for both of you. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a handout that I have just given to you. It starts with option two. Option two is a breakdown of how I have this tax on beer, and this is a beer-only tax. Right now, as the Senator stated, we're paying approximately 0.7 cents per bottle of beer. This would immediately increase it to 5 cents per bottle of beer, approximately. And you can see the revenues through the five-year period. The five-year period works that we give the state police approximately $6 million the first year, $12 million the second year, $18 million, $24 and $31.5 million after a five-year period. Detox and alcohol rehab the first year received approximately $36 million, $30 the second year, $24, $18, and $10,500,000 in the last year. So what we're doing is we're incrementing into the state police, infusing into them an avenue so they can, in fact, hire approximately 60 troopers per year. You see on the second page of it, it alludes to what the senator just said. This is the way it was in 1979. We had 641 troopers. Today, after an increase in population of a little over 40%, we're at 287. That tells me we have not done a good job with this organization. We've gotten it to the point where our backbone in the state of Oregon for law enforcement is almost entirely broken. The sad part about it is that these gentlemen and ladies that we have out there on the highways today do not have adequate backup, nor do they have the proper equipment. They do not have computers, and they do not have the cameras in their vehicles that kick on after 80 miles an hour or when they turn their lights on so we can see and observe. The third page relates to DUI arrests, which is very interesting. You can see in the year 2001 that we made approximately 6,940 arrests. Then we laid off troopers. Laid off 129, February of 2003. We immediately dropped to 4,807 DUIs. Did drunk driving go down? No, not at all. It probably even went up. You can see that that tapered down to in year 2005 that we have 3,742 DUI arrests by the state police. We've hamstrung this organization. Now, if you look at my amendments on my number three amendments, I have amended this bill to the point of where one is we immediately start a 5 cent. Two, we do it at a wholesale basis. Three, we increment it up to where if you have 50,000 gallons or less of production of beer per year, you don't pay taxes. If you're 50,000 and one to 100,000, you pay half the tax. If you're 100,000 and one and above, you pay the full tax. It also, at the end of this, and this is basically a breakdown of option two that explains in the dash three amendment. The other thing,
Representative, have you distributed the dash threes?
I assume that they would have been brought in.
I don't believe we have them. Does it, anyone have them?
Really?
I don't believe we have them. If you would, after your testimony, if you would get them to the committee, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
The other thing that I've added into this is that this shall go out to a vote of the people. This is a tax. But I'm going to ask the people of the state of Oregon, are you willing to pay a nickel for a cop? That's going to be the question. So I think it's palatable. I think you're going to see a lot of people. In fact, I just saw a flyer on my desk that said, we have the answer for the state police funding. It's already been taken care of. First of all, I want to dispel that. That is not correct. In no way, shape, or form have we figured out how we're going to fund the state police. I agree with the senator. If we do not put dedicated funding to this force, it will continue to erode and erode to the point of where it will be ineffective. Any questions?
Thank you. We'll certainly entertain questions. I remind you we have a very full agenda today. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We
thank
appreciate
you very
your
much.
Testimony. And the other members are coming, but I don't see them yet. So we'll hear from Ralph Groner, Brian DeLashmet. How about those two first? Yes, yes. Please bring someone. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to expedite, so we're courteous to the people in the audience. For the record, I'm Ralph Groner with AFSCME. For those who don't know who we are in the audience, that's American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I'd like to, at this time, introduce what we didn't hear all day Monday is our unit of the state police called Local 896. This is our president, Ginger Merritt, also on our state executive board. She's going to tell you what they do and what they've suffered. And how it, what we say, we're the ones who keep them safe. We not only keep the state police or troopers, not police, safe, but we also keep the public safe. So I'd like to introduce our president, Ginger Merritt, and then I'll make a closing comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ginger Merritt. I am president of Local AFSCME 896, and I'm also an employee of OSP as a firearms call taker, which is kind of interesting considering our Virginia incident. We are the ones who keep them safe, not only the troopers, but also our community. We're the OSP support units, and we take care of law enforcement data systems, and they work closely with all city and county law enforcement and information also to the troopers. And we try and provide them with the most current, correct, and up-to-date information on all criminal records, and we maintain that database. Then there's the firearms unit where I work. We're the only unit in the state who has the authority to issue approval of a gun sale by a federally licensed dealer. The unit works 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, with only 2 days off during the year. The purchase of approval is given after a background check, which includes all those data systems that everyone is using. So we have to have it current and correct. Forensic lab support specialists accept evidence from all agencies across the state, manage the chain of evidence, and evaluate and assign the evidence to workstations. Criminal history unit. They enter all the criminal records for the state of Oregon so that law enforcement officers have the most current data when dealing with the involved with a citizen. Fingerprint unit, it takes 3 to 4 days to compare a fingerprint data to see if there are current prints on file. If the citizen does not have a SID or a state identification number, then a record is initiated and it's sent to criminal history to enter into the state data system. Regulatory unit, they run the fingerprint checks on applicants applying for public sector jobs, included dealing with our children, the elderly, and the disabled. They verify whether a person has a criminal history that would disallow them from working with them. The clearinghouse unit runs fingerprints for the private sector, which includes any organization that works with children, the elderly, or disabled. They verify whether they have a criminal history and if it would put those people in jeopardy. Lab technicians assist the forensic scientists in preparing the labs for testing of evidence of all kinds. And the patrol offices are kept open by our support staff. They deal with the public and they enter data brought in by the officers. Representative Escoval said, as troopers' levels went down, so did their support staff. And as troopers' levels go up, the support staff also has to be there to help maintain all the information. We are the ones that keep them safe, and OSP does not work without the OSP support unit. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and that's my president. I'm just going to close with this out of courtesy to the packed audience you noticed today, but when we talked about general fund on Monday, you noticed it was mostly troopers and their family and a few of us. That represents the politics of what we're talking about today. I don't need to say a word. I would say to you, Mr. Chair, and wonderful members of the committee, because you've really been helpful. I could look at all of you. I've walked for 3 months with my good friend young Andy, the trooper, and I can tell you we interviewed everybody, we tried to find out where they were, and I appreciate your input. You've really, really been wonderful. All I have to say is AFSCME's position is we need help. We need help for the troopers, and we need some kind of dedicated fund. My problem is that, I just want to get them adequately funded. If you were going to do the general fund, of course, you went through that, so I don't need to comment on it. You went through that Monday. I don't want to bore you. You already know the answer. If you were to use the lottery, and Rep. Berger has a wonderful idea, at least that's dedicated. However, I went to look at the lottery yesterday, and I'll only say this. To me, at least, when I voted for the lottery on economic development and then I voted for education, I thought it meant K through higher ed. Then when I asked Mr. Warner how many dollars go for community colleges out of the lottery, I found out if I have the wrong number, I'll get fired. So you can check with him, but I think it was zero. And then I asked how much went for education for higher ed, and it was $11 million. I'm sorry, those aren't my locals, but I'm not sorry. Economic development evolves around the total seamless education in this state, and I hope, as I told you, Mr. Chair, that probably should be looked at as to the lottery. In the end, whether we have a beer tax or not, where I have a difference from some is that they've been my best friends. They've supported. I've been the fundraiser in Clackamas County for youth sports for 30 years. And quite frankly, the folks that are here, the distributors, have been the one who gave me the money for my kids' programs. I started a group called Clackamas Youth Sports. That's grown into quite a giant organization. But it has been, by the way, the beer industry that continuously gave everything from youth sports in my county. I'm not against them, but if you were going to do a beer tax, I do believe that it probably should be a vote of the people. You're going to see a lot of money spent. There has been on anything we put out. If we were going to put something out on highways, Associated General Contracts would hit you. If you were going to do the lottery, then you're going to face some education opposition. So in the end, our union, our members, who work not only to support the safety of our friends, the troopers, but by the way, what we're trying to show what we do, we also want to support the protection and safety of the general public. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Lashman.
Brian DeLashman, representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association. Believe it or not, for those people in the audience, that was Ralph being very brief. I'll be extremely brief. You saw from a trooper, and you also saw from Andy Moyer on Monday, in general terms about what we're trying to accomplish. The troopers have three primary principles that they're looking at in any plan that comes forward. One is dedicated funding. You've heard that repeatedly. The second one is 24/7 during this biennium. And the third one is the ability to grow. Because when we get to 24/7, that doesn't mean it's all over. That means next biennium, we need to take that next step toward total restoration of this organization back to where it needs to be. I would like to also thank Representative Burley and Representative Escobar for all the work that they have done behind the scenes on this issue, whether it's the Dash 3s on 3421 or some of the other variations. I do know that they've spent an inordinate amount of time on this, as has Representative Olson and Representative Berger and others, but particularly the first two, because I know that Andy, Ralph, and I have spent a lot of time with them on the issue, and that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick one here for Mr. Gelashman. Brian, do the demands on Oregon State Patrol troopers decrease during an economic decline?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, it's my understanding that that is not the case. I think you find actually increased drug activity, you find increased drinking during economic bad times, and as a result, then in fact, you have more potential for the bad guys to do bad things, and the demands actually go up. And that's one of the unfortunate things with not only OSP, but almost any program in the state, is when the economy goes down, social services demands go up, state police demands go up. And that's another one of the reasons why we would like a dedicated source.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to add to that, if you don't mind, Representative Witt. This is more for the audience, because this came out the other day, and he made me have tears, Trooper Duncan. But he said, when I feel guilty, there's nowhere where in Oregon where when we park our car and we lock it up and we go home, sometimes at midnight, that we know the bars are still open and there's not one state trooper on that highway. And that hit me hard, because that means we have in fact seen increased carnage on our roads, because we haven't had the troopers at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. I'm going to call people now who have indicated that they come from more than 100 miles away, because I want to make certain that we get you in today. But first we're going to hear from Representative Jackie Dingfelder and from Senator Morissette's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I didn't realize you were here.
I just breezed in. So in the middle of renewable energy hearing, so it's a
right. We let the representatives go ahead because they're in other committees where they're doing work on other bills right now. Please.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. Appreciate you allowing me to testify today on House Bill 2535. and I'm here with representative from Senator Morissette's office. Senator Morissette couldn't be here today, so Don Bischoff is here. And I apologize because I'm going to give my testimony and have to run back to my very packed committee room. It's time for us to confront the fact that there is an enormous cost shift occurring in Oregon due to alcohol use. Taxes on alcohol products were designed to pay a portion of the cost of alcohol abuse and addiction. However, Oregon's tax on beer is currently so low that it's totally out of proportion to alcohol's cost to the public. Currently, Oregon collects only $1 in alcohol tax for every estimated $39 in alcohol-related costs. It's a 1-to-39 ratio, not very good. The cost of alcohol abuse, which includes such items as law enforcement, emergency services, foster care, addiction treatment, and prevention programs, are increasingly borne by Oregon taxpayers and not by the alcohol industry and its customers. Oregonians have suffered as alcohol and drug programs in our state have been gutted due to lack of funding. It is estimated today that only one out of every seven Oregonians who need treatment actually get treatment. Of particular concern, treatment programs for young people are close to non-existent. Oregon ranks 49th out of 50th in access to addiction treatment among 18 to 25-year-olds. And Oregon consistently ranks in the bottom tier for treatment funding, and our families and communities have been hit hard as support for treatment and prevention programs decreases each biennium. If some are still unsure about the need for increasing the beer tax, consider the fact that Oregon's underage drinking statistics are staggering. It's estimated that underage drinkers in Oregon consume between 17 and 20% of all alcohol sold, accounting for industry profits of about $135 million. Oregon eighth grader use of alcohol is estimated to be more than 80% higher. Let me repeat that, 80% higher than the national average, and I was shocked when I learned these figures, colleagues. Many experts, including the American Medical Association and the Institute of Medicine, have concluded that the single best way to cut youth use of alcohol is to raise the price. Oregon has one of the lowest beer taxes in the country. It's currently less than a penny a bottle, and the beer tax hasn't been adjusted in over 30 years. But the need for alcohol addiction treatment, prevention programs, and law enforcement has increased exponentially since that time. House Bill 2535, which I'm proud to co-sponsor with Senator Morissette.
And excuse me, you're aware that we have an information meeting going today precisely because we don't have that bill before the committee.
I'm well aware of that.
Thank you. I'll
refer to it in the abstract.
Thank you.
This bill addresses the vicious cycle of addiction by allocating resources where they're in need of most, to addiction and prevention programs and to law enforcement. Every dollar spent on these programs will mean fewer families will be disrupted and shattered by alcohol use, and many more lives will be saved. So this bill benefits all Oregonians, and I urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to defer to my colleague, and I apologize because I need to run back to my committee before it gets out of control.
Thank you very much.
When you
chair a committee, you don't want to leave very long. The people might be up to mischief while you're gone.
Exactly.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. And I know that Don can answer any questions because he is an expert on this issue.
Thank you. Don?
Chair Barnhart, committee members, my name is Don Bischoff. I'm legislative assistant to Senator Morissette, who's on his way to an out-of-state conference and regrets that he can't be here today. I think you'll find that the bill that we must not mention by name, a.k.a. HB 2535, could be the solution to the problem that you're wrestling with, which is funding two of the major things that need funding from a beer tax or could be funded from a beer tax. It's a way to pay for both state police and for increased alcohol and drug prevention programs, treatment programs, and local law enforcement programs. There would be money in this bill, in this tax, to help finance county sheriffs and city police to help enforce alcohol and drug-related laws. We had an early estimate from OLCC that the 10-cent a drink tax that would be levied in this bill would raise approximately $121.6 million every biennium, and that is with an exemption for small breweries that would mean that no Oregon brewery would pay the tax. That works out to every 1 cent of tax raises 12.6 million per biennium. So 10 cents gets you 121.6, 5 cents gets you 62.8 million, and so on. The bill would direct the money to a variety of alcohol and drug addiction treatment prevention and local law enforcement programs. This is a bill that Senator Morsette and Representative Dingfeller have worked on for three sessions now. You'll hear some evidence from other people who testify today about why they think this is such an important thing and why these variety of programs deserve support. But they're true believers in this, but they're also true believers that they're political realists, I suppose, would be the best way to explain it. They realize that there's also much need and political support for funding state troopers, and so they're willing to compromise. They've met with the five principal sponsors of the other two beer bills that are before you today, and those five have all agreed that there should be a split between these two areas, between state police and alcohol and drug prevention treatment and local law enforcement. What they can't agree on is what the split should be, as you might gather. The other legislators would primarily like to see 75% go to state police and 25% to alcohol and drug programs. Senator Morsette, Representative Dingfelter believe that there should be more for A&D. I've given you a sheet along with my prepared testimony that shows how a better split compromise might work. It's the third page in the testimony, which you don't have yet. Anyhow, it would show you how you could divert part of the beer tax to fund the $24 million needed to to fund the $24 million that you need to get the 139 more state troopers that the governor proposed in his budget. And I'm told by state police officials that figure would remain a constant in the out years, so that every biennium you'd need $24 million to continue to support those 139 troopers. If you had a 10-cent tax raised to $121.6 million, you could get the $24 million for state police and still have $97.6 million for much-needed alcohol and drug treatment and prevention and local law enforcement. A couple of important points. Whatever the split, both legislators, Representative Dingfelter and Senator Morsette, would urge you to maintain the formula that's spelled out in House Bill 2535, which is not before you today. This is something that they've worked out over three sessions with all of the people who participate in these various programs. None of these people would tell you it gives them enough money, but they all realize the necessity for compromise. And so this is a hard-fought-for formula, and whatever you do, if you give money to alcohol and drug treatment and prevention, they would urge you to preserve that formula. The second thing is that their bill proposes an exemption for small breweries, which would include all Oregon breweries. For reasons that are best known to them, and you may hear today, the Oregon Brewers Guild and the Oregon breweries have fought this bill, even though it would exempt them from the tax. So you may want to consider not exempting them, since they seem to be unhappy with any. That gets you a whole lot more money, not coincidentally. With a 10-cent a drink tax without a local exemption, I've seen one set of figures that suggest you could raise $181 million per biennium. If you throw in a wine increase and open another can of worms, you can raise as much as $245 million. So the options are there, but the important thing that Senator Morsette and Representative Dingfelter believe is that you must fund, the state must fund in some way, a better alcohol and drug prevention treatment and local law enforcement program. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Don. Questions today? I assume we will definitely be getting to these issues
sure.
again. We appreciate your testimony. Senator Metzger is here. Senator, you're in committee now, aren't you? Yep. Please come forward.
Well, he's coming forward, Mr. Chair. Yes. Just a question for staff quickly. I noticed that there's almost zero elasticity figured in the numbers that are here. Is there a reason for that, that we don't dissuade people from consuming deer when you go from 5 cents to 10 cents? According to the information of the tax collected here.
You won't dissuade me.
Okay.
I think that's the answer to your question, Representative Butler. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, and thank you for the opportunity to get out of talking energy policy next door for a few moments and talk about the proposals before you today. I'm the co-sponsor with Representative Holby on House Bill 2731, which you have before you as part of this group of bills regarding alcohol taxes, specifically beer and wine, and relating to the state police. I know you will hear lots of testimony, and you have in the past. This is not a new issue. So rather than belabor all the different things of which the state has needs and why this might have a nexus, I would just want to comment on a couple things in general. There are certainly a number of approaches to go with a beer tax or a beer and wine tax. In the specific House bill that Representative Holvey and I have, it doesn't exempt anybody, because I think if you make a nexus that, especially for the state police, which this is primarily dedicated to, 75%, and you recognize the role they play with getting drunk drivers off the road, to recognize the role that they're not really the only ones that really check for whether you're currently licensed and all the other issues that they perform for us, you can definitely see the nexus between raising the alcohol tax to actually fund that type of a service. I also believe that while I understand the political dynamic and, frankly, would be supporter of anything in most cases, with a caveat, that this committee and the House of Representatives may send over to the Oregon Senate, I think that paralysis by analysis is probably the worst thing that could happen. It's been very successful for 30 years. I know Representative Berger knows that on other issues. And I can, just like you, pick a lot of things apart. So in looking for the good in search of the perfect, it's the lobbyist's dream to make you look for the perfect and hoping that you won't select it. I would, there's a number of issues that, in terms of retail tax instead of production tax. I will tell you, I have one of those big, small brewers in my district, Full Sail. And they're wonderful folks, and I know they're very concerned about it. I've made it very clear to them, though. I think that where Oregon stands, and even except for maybe perhaps the most aggressive proposal before you, still puts Oregon so far low on the totem pole that from a competitive standpoint, it's just very hard for me to make an analysis that this is going to hurt Oregon's competitiveness at any level of brewing. But I would like to just leave you one suggestion of to consider, and I'm working on the language on this with Paul Warner and others. I actually had this epiphany about 2 weeks ago, and I've been testing it out, and so far it seems to stand up, and I think it would be something I'd like the committee to think about. In talking to different brewers, and you may have had these same discussions, if you talk about the retail tax, the angst goes way down. In fact, the ones I've talked to actually said they would be supportive of a retail tax as opposed to the production tax, because it affects everybody the same way and doesn't move through the chain and disadvantage small brewers. You talk to the Department of Revenue, and with all due respect to Revenue, they'll tell you how it's going to create a huge bureaucracy. They need a million people, and it's going to cost tens of dollars, and you can't do that without a tremendous investment. But in listening to Senator Avakian as he was working with the bottle bill, this is where I received this epiphany and the discussion whether we should have 5 cents or 10 cents, and how the system was pretty well self-contained and rather easy. And the decision, at least at this moment, has been to go to 5 cents for various reasons. But I was then thinking about Senator Morissette and others and their comments that about the beer tax and how you could translate this to everyday people as just 5 cents a drink. And so that 5 cents stuck with me, and it stuck with me with the bottle bill of 5 cents, and it stuck with me with the decision to go to 10 cents. And finally it came to me, and as I started talking with folks at Revenue, is that we have a mechanism already in place to do the beer tax without a bureaucracy. I said, it's the bottle bill. As long as we have a three-tier system, all beer comes through the distributor. Whether it's going to, when you buy it at the store or you go to a restaurant. And so just pretend for a moment, committee, if we had a 10-cent, quote, bottle bill, but 5 cents was a tax. And so when the distributor collects from the grocer at the point of distribution, instead of collecting a nickel, he doesn't collect a dime, except 5 cents of it is tax and goes directly to the Department of Revenue. And then everyone else recollects their tax along the way. You don't have a big bureaucracy. It's already in place with the bottle bill mechanism. And the only thing you have to figure out is how you weigh the ounces per the kegs. And how what that would be collected. But you're not going to have tens of thousands of collection points. You're going to have a couple dozen. And those are the distributors in the state of Oregon who already have the paperwork in place, and they just extract that 5 cents and send it on to the Department of Revenue, and there is your retail tax on beer without setting up a whole bureaucracy. I would seriously look, and I'm putting this in a legislative concept for you, but as I've tested this, I think this is it meets what the brewers are concerned about, that the retail tax is okay, but the production tax hurts us. It answers the questions about the big bureaucracy of having a retail tax. And I say, heaven's sake, we've got that already. A nickel is given every time a bottle of beer goes out of a distributor, collected as a dime, and send the other 5 cents on to the Department of Revenue, and you don't have to create any bureaucracy at all. Then we, as you hear about all the needs, and you decide how best to dovetail the revenue with the needs, that's fine. You'll have those discussions. But I think we have a mechanism in place. It's a beautiful mechanism, and it doesn't have to create a bureaucracy. And you can establish a fair and reasonable excise to provide the important needs in my particular view of the Oregon State Police. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Berger.
Representative Berger.
Sorry.
And it's a comment.
When the senators come to town, I lose my track of who's who. Go ahead.
But I feel that I have to comment. Since this is the first I have heard this idea, Senator Metzger, and had you, since I've spent an awful lot of time working on the bottle bill proposal, I would make a couple of just comments because I can't let it go. Mm-hmm. One is, I wish you'd talked to me before, because you will find that behind the curtain of that 5 cents on the bottle bill, it is anything but simple and straightforward. And two, after all the work on the bottle bill and 36 years of being unable to change it, for any mention of taking a bottle bill piece and adding a tax to it stops my heart.
Well, thank you. thank you, Representative Berger. But it's very interesting is that I understand that. And I'm not suggesting this is any amendment to the bottle bill. I'm talking about
the conversation together. You see my heart?
You see me
sliding down under here? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm through.
Thank you, Representative.
I'm just suggesting, Representative Berger, there is a mechanism that doesn't necessarily require, when you have a three-tier distributor system, as we do, you have a point of contact for these products that is limited in a couple of dozen rather than tens of thousands. And whether you want to call at the bottle bill or set up another system, the fact of the matter is the distributors could be the retail collection point, which make this a very, very simple way to enact any type of retail tax on these products.
Thank you. Well, rather than spending a lot more time on that subject today, I would suggest that it might be worth your while, Senator, to get a hold of Representative Berger and have a further conversation about this matter as we proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I said opening up, I think that paralysis by analysis is the worst part. I think that it's time to take action on this issue. However you do, I think you'll find a very supportive Senate in the work that you ultimately come up with.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimonies. Debbie Jones, Kathy Schwartz from Wasco County, and then I have some others who say they're from more than 100 miles away. The next one on the list is Sharon Gudera. Oh, I see. That's an R, not a V. Thank you.
I write that. Mr. Chairman Barnhart and committee members, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Debbie Jones, and I am a lifelong resident of Wasco County. I have a written testimony that I will submit, but I wanted to share with you an event that we had in our community most recently. We had a meth town hall forum And the group that was in charge of this event was very optimistic and hoped that maybe we could get 300 people to show up. And we thought that would be a very good turnout. We had over 1,100 people turn out for this event. We did kind of a survey process. We didn't have enough surveys, obviously. And the top three, things that they thought would have the biggest impact in combating meth in our area were prevention, education in the schools, and treatment. The other was more positive activities for kids and families. But in our community, meth, and I know you're thinking, well, we're talking about an alcohol tax. I have not met an individual that is a meth addict who just started with that. There is a series, and alcohol plays a large part in that. And as you've already heard before, our youth are using at an alarmingly, a terrible rate, higher than other states. And, you know, I'm definitely speaking to the unknown bill. But I appreciated even having this opportunity for you to hear our comments. Please take this seriously. Our people, one of our most valued resources, we're losing them, and we need to do something now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
And Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm not Kathy Schwartz. I'm handing out her written testimony, and she was unable to be here. She's the public health director for Wasco and Sherman County. But for the record, I am Sharon Gadara, and I'm the executive director of a four-county behavioral health center in Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gillum counties. I would like to say that I'm thrilled that there are so many bills before you to consider a wine and beer tax, but none of the bills are as comprehensive as 2535, which we're not talking about, and I understand that. But I would also like to say I'm a great supporter of the state police and law enforcement, state police and the courts, and the addiction treatment specialists all work together. I would like to say I am envious that the state police made it both into the co-chair's budget and into the governor's budget. And with your indulgence, I will read one quote from my testimony. And this is from Jay Waterbury, who's chief of police at the City of the Dalles. I get to witness the multi-generational effects of addiction. Without strong addictions, prevention, early intervention, and treatment services to lessen the demand for drugs and abuse of alcohol, we will not be able to put enough officers on the street or build enough jails and prisons. You need the three approaches working together. What I have to say is locally our system is broken. We do not have funds for local detox services. We have to send people either to Portland or Pendleton. That takes those very law enforcement people off the street transporting. We do not have money for jail diversion programs or for aftercare, and it'll take a significant investment. HB 2535 is a very thoughtful and very comprehensive approach that gives money to the addiction system, both prevention and treatment, but also to public health that deals with a lot of the issues as well, and law enforcement. I hope you'll consider that as a foundation in any bill that ultimately passes. And I've also heard a number of testimonies regarding to send a revenue bill to the people. Well, I do know before the session there was a survey done, and 67% of those polled did favor a wine and beer tax if it was tied to treatment. So I think it will be favorable. But I would have to say, as a private citizen, we elect you for the leadership, and I hope you really take this opportunity to consider and pass some funding for badly needed treatment systems. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I would like to call Kevin Campbell. It looks like Jesse Castro, Candy Hernandez, and then Elvira. I'm sorry, I don't have a last name that I can read. And Scott. It looks like Slatum.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the executive director of Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, which is a 12-county mental health organization out of the Dalles. 10 of our counties are in eastern Oregon. The other two counties are in Clatsop and Columbia. Needless to say, we cover about half the geography in the state of Oregon. I'm very familiar with where Oregon's shortages of state police are. I'm also very familiar with where our shortages of drug and alcohol treatment are. And this is the third session that I've been down here talking about an increase in the beer tax. And it's the first time that I haven't had a 5:30 in the morning meeting with Representative Butler to go along with that.
That's because I sleep later than he does.
But if it'll help, I'll come in tomorrow morning. The real issue that we're facing here is not pitting one needed service against another. We have an opportunity to create a dedicated funding stream. And as Sharon Gadara said, we really need to look at the continuum of what it takes in a rural community or what it takes in an urban community in this state. If you have police to arrest people, the only place you can send them is jail. You have to have drug courts to divert those people into treatment. If you don't have adequate dollars for treatment, then people just go through the spinning door and back out onto the streets. I've supported the beer industry personally since 1970 in the state of Oregon. My beer of preference was Blitz Weinhardt way back when, which doesn't exist anymore. As I recall, a bottle of beer in the late 70s would cost you in the neighborhood of 25 to 35 cents. A glass of beer today costs you in the neighborhood of $3.25 to $4. So think about the economies of scale of 7/10 of a cent of tax on that bottle in the 1970s versus a 10-cent tax on a glass of beer today. And most of all, I believe and firmly believe that a bulk of a dedicated fund from beer taxes really does need to go to addictions treatment. If we don't address that issue and we don't address it now, then our rural communities in this state will suffer inordinately. We're seeing it with the meth epidemic. If we don't get ahead of the curve, we will not have economic development in rural Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Hello. My name is Alvia Santian. I am a sophomore at Hood River Valley High School. I'm involved with Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Prevention Coalition and Si Se Puede. I also attended CATCA's conference, CATCA's National Drug Prevention Conference in Washington, D.C. in this past February. Thanks for listening to my perspective on favoring House Bill 2535. The increase of alcohol in our community is a big problem nowadays. Days pass, and I see many of my friends going through hard times due to the use of alcohol. Alcohol changes an aspect in what you do. Now, I don't even know if they're my friends. They've changed and are very different than when I first met them. The use of alcohol is increasing more every day in dances, house parties, birthdays, and many other events. Alcohol is everywhere. What you would call a birthday party is now an alcohol and get drunk party. Those parties cause many trouble with the police, parents, accidents, and it ruins your reputation. That is the reason I don't attend house parties. There is always beer, and I know that I would be committing the wrong decision. House Bill 2535 can help to stop the crazy and terrible moments that many teenagers are going through. 40% of Oregon State's 8th grade students use alcohol. It is 80% higher than the national average for 8th graders. That is what I call unbelievable. So I volunteer and give presentations to middle school students to influence them not to use drugs. Alcohol is costing and ruining many people's lives. So alcoholism costs each Oregonian $683 annually. They spent over $1 billion advertising and thinking of how to get the attention of us teenagers. Why waste $1 billion on something that is only going to make people suffer? It kills and ruins people's lives. It's expensive in our communities, and it gets people addicted to other drugs. If we don't put an increase on the beer and wine tax, our communities are going to fail. Please do the right thing by passing House Bill 2535. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
My name is Scott Slatim, and I'm a youth minister at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Hood River, and I'm also the volunteer chair for our Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Prevention Coalition. And we are definitely in favor of the unknown bill. And as we heard, you know, 67% of Oregonians are in favor of increasing the alcohol tax if revenue goes towards prevention and treatment. And as you probably know, Oregon currently ranks 45th in the state for addiction treatment, and it ranks 49th in the nation for addiction treatment for 18 to 25 year olds. And as you heard Elvia said, if you look at the national 8th grade average, we're about 80% higher than the rest of the state of Oregon. And we know for a fact that kids who start drinking before the age of 15 are 5 times more likely to become an alcoholic, which in turn means they'll eventually need addiction treatment. So it's a continual cycle. And we also know that between 17-20% of the alcohol sales sold in the state of Oregon is sold to underage drinkers. Almost 20% is being consumed by underage drinkers. And the research shows that the single most effective way that we can reduce that is by increasing the malt beverage tax. And as you've heard, it hasn't been increased in 30 years. And as you also know, you know, alcoholism is costing each Oregonian $683. That's a hidden tax on us who choose not to consume alcohol. And we also know that 10% of the heaviest drinkers are consuming 43% of the alcohol sold in the state of Oregon. 10%, 43% is what they're consuming. And the heaviest drinkers are the ones who are utilizing most of the state services, emergency health care, car crashes, criminal justice costs, workers' comp claims, child abuse. And so it only makes sense that that we as Oregonians support this bill and its passage. And not only that, it's also providing much needed money for addiction treatment and for prevention treatment. Because as we know, a dollar prevention is way more cheaper than a dollar, you know, towards treatment or law enforcement. So I just encourage you to help support passage of that bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our Candy and Jesse wanting to be heard today?
Are my people?
Yes.
Yes, most definitely.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the House Committee on Revenue. My name is Yesenia Castro, and no, Fidel Castro is not my grandpa. I am a student in Hood River Valley High School.
And if you would sit back away from the mic a little bit, you'll find that it actually works better.
Yeah.
I'm almost 18 inches from mine, and you can hear me fine.
Okay. So thanks for having a youth here today and listening to us, to our perspective on the alcohol tax. I have been volunteering for Drug Prevention Coalition since I can remember, and I've been trying to make a difference. And not long ago, I went to Washington, D.C. on the CADCA forum, and we learned a lot and received a national award for outstanding alcohol prevention, and we received this one as well. I feel like we failed though, because no matter how hard we try, there's the number of my classmates using alcohol is still extremely high, and no matter what we do, it's binge drinking is getting really dangerous, and everybody's drinking that I know, and that's the reality. I am a student, and I know what's going on in school, and it's the students my age right now are just, alcohol is really becoming a problem. In 2004, 40% of Hood River's 8th graders, like Elvis said, have been using alcohol, and it dropped to 30% in 2006, which is a 25% reduction. It sounds impressive on paper, but it's really almost twice as high as the national rate. And in 2006, 19s were taken to the emergency room and treated for alcohol poisoning, and most teens don't go or try to sleep it off because they don't want to get in trouble. even parents tell their kids to drink coffee or walk it off or don't even help them out. And this year we lost a little baby girl and a 3-year-old due to drunk driving. The youth are the greatest target in the alcohol industry, and they spend billions of dollars every year to advertise to us, making it look either popular or sexy or just trying to make it look like it's a normal part of teen life when it's not. Teens in Oregon buy almost 20% of the alcohol sold in Oregon, which is a lot if you think about it. And that's about $135 million that profit the alcohol industry. So why should they profit at an expense of our friends' lives and pain and suffering? Why don't you vote for what the voters of Oregon want, is to increase the beer tax and wine tax and the revenue going to prevention and treatment? It is the single most effective way to reduce underage drinking. Help me do the right thing and pass the alcohol tax. Thanks.
Thank you.
To members of the House Committee on Revenue, good afternoon. My name is Cindy Hernandez. I appreciate you taking testimony in House Bill 2535 from a person who can't yet vote, but will register in June when I turn 18. I will join the 61% of Oregonians who would vote for legislators that had the common sense to increase the tax on beer and wine and direct the revenue to prevention, treatment, enforcement, and medical costs associated with alcohol abuse. I have been volunteering in drug prevention activities in Hood River County since I started high school 4 years ago. It is important to me because I don't want to lose family and friends to the problems that alcohol causes. I grew up with domestic violence in my home. I watched my mom physically beaten. I listened to her screams at night. I heard her cry until I finally called the police. I was 10 years old. My brother is not going to be in my graduation because he is in jail too, as lost in the cycle of violence, all fueled by alcohol. I volunteer 10 hours a week every week with our Commission on Children and Families, our Drug Prevention Coalition, and at school to try to convince others not to use and abuse alcohol and other drugs. I organize the billboard contest at my high school for students. We teach them how to tell their friends not to use alcohol. 400 kids learned about problems associated with alcohol, and 40 submitted designs for the competition. My friend Claudia designed this one showing how alcohol gets in the way of friends' graduations. And the winning billboard showed how we can celebrate life events such as prom and homecoming without alcohol. We are trying to develop our own message to counter that of the alcohol industry that markets to youth. Of course, their budget was $1.3 billion in 2004. We had $500 that came from a national award our coalition received in 2007. As hard as I work, I cannot stem the tide of alcohol abuse in our community. I need your help. House Bill 2535 is just common sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony very much. And thank you for traveling all that way to come and be with us today.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And can I say they deserve thanks for being on the grassroots and helping
absolutely.
Their community?
Absolutely. Yes. Gary Smith, Kathy Miller, Deborah Gilmore. As you can, what I'm trying to do now is to get the people who have come the farthest to testify, and then we'll go back to the list in order.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I would
please.
Like to defer my time, if I could, to a family that is here that would very much like to speak to you. I have an opportunity to speak to this committee again at another time, but they may not. And so if I may,
yes, please.
My time to
yes.
those individuals, the Kibler family.
Please.
Why don't you both sit here and I can hold on.
Yes, and the Kibblers did not indicate that they were from far away. That's why I didn't call them earlier. Thank you.
Please go ahead while they're getting situated.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart and members of the House Revenue Committee, my name is Gary Smith. I was going to testify in favor of 2535 today, but for obvious reasons I won't go specifically to that. I'm going to make my comments more generic.
Please.
If that's okay with you.
And generic comments are appreciated because, as you can see, we're looking at a concept.
Yes.
As much as we are at an individual bill. So that would be helpful to us for all witnesses.
Yes.
Thank you.
I am the chair of the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families at the current time, and during my career I was the Alcohol and Drug Services Manager in five of Oregon's counties. I am currently sitting on the Governor's Alcohol and Drug Abuse Council. I provided letters attached to my testimony from the directors of the Deschutes County Public Health, Mental Health, and Commission on Children and Families. Hopefully you'll have a chance to take a look at those. These letters outline in sort of broad form the impacts of alcohol use and abuse on the county's resources, including jails, hospitals, and social services. During my 30 years in the field, one thing I saw that was consistent was the lack of adequate and stable funding. You're going to hear a lot about that. I'm not going to give you a lot of data because other people can do that better than me, probably. I have to say I'm very encouraged by what I'm hearing here today. I've been advocating for a beer increase for 20 years, I think. This is the first time I've ever felt that we were close, perhaps, to some kind of a critical mass to actually have this happen. And that's why my more generic comments, if you will, I'm more enthused about than the comments I prepared for you. And that's because I'm seeing not a consensus, a lot of common ground here from all the speakers so far. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing I am or not. You haven't heard from some of the opponents, perhaps, of the beer tax yet, which you will. But what I'm seeing is common ground around the fact that we have just major alcohol-related problems in Oregon. You're going to hear that consistently. I don't think anyone can deny that. I think you're going to see a lot of consensus around the need for more stable and adequate funding, something that is true both of state police as well as human services programs. You're going to see that there's broad agreement that a beer tax is a fair way to support these programs because alcohol ties so closely to the social and legal problems we're talking about today. And I think you're going to hear a lot of consensus that almost everybody agrees that a beer tax in Oregon is long overdue, since 1978, in fact. Although 2535, the way it's written, would be my preference, I hope that whatever you do end up supporting, and I have a feeling you just might do it this time, will be predominantly going to prevention and treatment programs, with perhaps a fair share going to law enforcement as well. That's really all I'm going to say today to you. I appreciate your attention on this and your sincere interest in this issue. And like I say, I'm more optimistic than I've been in 20 years.
Thank you very much. Please.
My name is Vicki Kibler. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, thank you for doing this. We appreciate what you do and protection and care for your communities that you're from. For the record, my name is Vicki Kibler. I'm a Lake Oswego resident. And I am a mother of three. I own three Wendy's restaurants. And I would like to talk to you today about a story that my life has evolved into that was certainly not a story I planned when we started our lives, my husband and I, together. December 21st, 2004, my oldest son, Patrick, was the age of 21. And my youngest son, Scott, 14 at the time, left the house to go to the club, shoot a few hoops. And they were returning home, the younger son, and I were waiting for them to come back. We were wrapping Christmas presents and watching a movie. An officer came to the door instead. He said, "You need to go to the hospital. Your sons have been taken in two ambulances to OHSU, and you need to go immediately." We got in the car, went to the hospital. My oldest son was coding when we walked in the door. He was in the operating room already, and we went to the ICU immediately to see how Scott was faring. They came to get my husband and I out of the ICU, and we had to walk down this hall. It was like the longest hall I've ever been in my life. And I begged my husband, I said, "Why don't we just not go down this hall? Maybe they won't have to tell us what I know they're going to say." And when we got there, the doctors were all there from the trauma team, and they said, "We're sorry, we couldn't save your son's life, and Scott will be in a coma, and we don't know what the condition of the trauma will be cognitively for him." A few days later, we left to go home. We had had plans to celebrate my dad's 80th birthday and my middle son's 18th birthday. The house was filled with birthday and Christmas, and we just didn't know what to do. We were missing a person. And when I left the hospital, when I went to the hospital, I had three sons. When I left, I had two sons. My oldest son, Shu. Sorry. Kevin and Scott received Patrick's diploma posthumously that May, and we've tried to pick up the pieces of our lives and keep going. We're grateful that Scott is with us, that he's doing as well as he is. The surgeons have all said that it was dodging a bullet. They have no clue, as you can see from the picture of that, yes, that is a Volvo, that Scott was in. And I would just ask that you please schedule House Bill 2535, are the unknown bills we're all laughing about, for a work session and get it passed to Ways and Means. Also, I would ask that you recommend that the Ways and Means get Senate Bill 184 moving. Money is spent on education, and it works. We have been working with Oregon Partnership and the Lake Oswego Police Department, our little bitty community, and the local schools to educate students on alcohol and drug use. And I am so excited to report to you, MIPs were down by 66 last year. Now, that might not seem like a lot to you, but it's 66 less kids that were drinking and on the roads and that were high school kids and younger. The police department loves to spend money on education. I know I'm going to Tillamook next week to speak. I've spoken all over the state at schools. As they ask me, I go freely of my own time and volunteer to speak in high schools. And the kids are so responsive. Oregon Partnership has provided the information, the paperwork, and the education tools that we use as we go out and speak. Scott is starting to do the same thing. And, you know, over $800,000 was spent for each one of my children by the state. And that's a cost to me, the taxpayer, and you, the taxpayer. And I would so much rather see that $1.6 million just on my two sons alone that's been spent on education. Our police department in Lake Oswego genuinely believes in a zero tolerance policy, and they nail adults and kids right and left for drinking and driving. That's what the chief police believes in. And working with that community and that department has made me realize that education is so much more important than after-the-fact cost. This young man, look at him, and he's $800,000 of our money spent for what a waste, plus the trauma that's been occurring in our lives. Wouldn't we rather have spent that on education? And I certainly recommend any penny to any sheriff's department. If there are not cars on the road after 10 o'clock at night, shame on us. We need to analyze, maybe as a business owner, I would call that the cost of doing business, how we're allocating our funds and our profits. To us, it's tax dollars. How is it being spent? Maybe we need to look at our labor management a little differently in our departments. We need to allocate the funds, but we also need to educate. Officers would rather have positive experiences than negative experiences. I watch them go into basketball games, and they pass out our cards, and the kids call or email us. And then Scott would like to talk to you about where he's picked it up. I'd just like to say that please don't make the loss of my son's promise and future in his life futile and worthless. Thousands and thousands of Oregonians every year are affected by possibly the lack of education, the lack of encouragement from their peers, as these young girls were talking about. Please help us continue on this campaign that we've waged to educate the youth of our state. They are our future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Scott?
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, as my mom has already introduced me, my name is Scott Kibler. I'm here as a high school junior and a victim of a drunk driver. And as my mom has already said, you know, we were in a car accident where a drunk driver hit us, and I was put in a coma, and the list of injuries that I had is just, it's almost endless. I mean, I had a broken wrist, a fractured skull, a punctured lung, like numerous other injuries. But the crazy thing to me is that this could have happened to any of my friends. Just the next person driving down the road would have fallen in the same situation that happened to us. And I mean, my brother and I were just on the way to the gym to play basketball, and that's when the crash happened. The girl that hit us was charged with being 2.5 times the legal alcohol limit, as well as with 2 counts of cocaine. And for the services for my brother after his death, 1,100 people came. I really feel this is a testament to how many people are affected by the loss of just one person's life. These 1,100 people experienced the loss of losing, you know, a grandson, a son, a friend, a student, a brother. All these people had experienced the pain of losing someone, which I don't think anyone should ever have to experience. As my family and I were going through the whole legal process that was involved with our situation, one thing the DA told us really stuck out with me. He explained why our case, accident caused by a drunk driver and me with like ongoing cognitive problems, was not tried as severely as another manslaughter case might be, such as like a murder or another accidental death. He explained that it was because everyone drives and most people drink, if not heavily, then at least socially here and there. And so people were able to identify with it better and think just, well, this could happen to anybody. But while there may be some truth in this, it doesn't affect the end result. In the end, one life is still taken and countless others are still affected. This is why educating people on drunk driving and its consequences is so important. Just because drinking and driving is a little easier to identify with, it doesn't make the consequences any easier to live with. I'm now a volunteer at Youthline, one of Oregon Partnership's many life-saving programs. In the past few years, Youthline has been so successful at what it does that it's become the national model for similar crisis lines. Youthline is a 24/7 teen-to-teen crisis line that teens can call for any problem that they have, whether it's general family problems, alcohol problems, or even thoughts of suicide. They have someone there to talk to. If your teens won't talk to you, aren't you glad that they have someone that they can talk to about these problems? Youthline, however, is struggling to meet its budget, and some programs are in even worse shape and have lost their funding altogether. For me, the experience of working with OP as a Youthline volunteer has been life-changing. To help someone overcome hardship they are facing is just beyond comprehension. Education is the key. Please schedule House Bill 2535 for a work session and get it passed out to Ways and Means. I would also like to ask this committee to also recommend that the Ways and Means get Senate Bill 184 moving. The events that I have unfortunately had to face in my life have opened my eyes to the severity of drinking before getting behind the wheel of a car. Hopefully, with your support, we can educate other young people about this cause before they find themselves in a situation like mine. Thank you for your time today and for caring about teenagers in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Scott. We appreciate your coming and your mother coming and giving and sharing with us the story of your family's tragedy. We're very sorry that this has occurred to you.
Thank you
very much. I would like to call. I'm getting out of order here. Kurt Widmer, Art Lawrence, Brian, I'm having trouble, Brian, but you know who you are, Michelle, and I'm having trouble with that one as well. Would you come forward, please?
And Mr. Chair, I'm Kathy Miller. I have not yet had an opportunity to speak.
Oh, did I call you earlier?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
I deferred for the
we'll
panel.
Call us, we'll have those people queue up and go ahead and give your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Miller, and I'm a resident of Deschutes County in Redmond, Oregon. I serve as a Redmond School Board member. I'm also a community member, a parent volunteer, and mother of 3 teenage boys. I'm here today to state that there's great merit in HB Bill Proposal 2535, however it may be forwarded. As a concerned citizen about the increasing number of our young people who are choosing to drink alcohol at a younger age each year, I think you've seen by the testimony of many of our high schoolers how predominant this is becoming. In Deschutes County alone, over 33% of 8th graders and 55% of 11th graders report using alcohol in the past 30 days. I heard some members of the audience saying, what is your research from? And it's from the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey of 2006. Many families are moving in to rapidly growing communities, but many are not fitting in. And I can tell you, being a parent volunteer in the classroom with a lot of kids, both in sports and academics, that we have tremendous peer pressure. Whenever the cost of alcohol goes up, there is research that shows youth consumption does go down. I know that raising the cost of alcohol, some of us may say it's not a big deal. I can afford it. I can afford the extra 5 or 10 cents. But I can tell you, to a kid that has 54 cents in his pocket, if they want to buy a queen or a king being a Bud and a queen being a Bud Light, you know, 54 cents is maybe all they've got. And if we raise it, it could make an impact. I think one of our concerns is, as many communities that are mobilizing and trying to partner in a very aggressive youth prevention and intervention program, I think we need to give a lot more merit to the student-led initiatives. We heard Scott talking about his youth line. We heard the other high schoolers talk about different clubs and programs and things that they're involved in and that they have initiated. I think what we have to remember today as citizens and community members, as parents and elected officials, that there is student buy-in. There is student ownership. And even though we have a lot of kids with a lot of problems, there are kids here who want to be part of the solution. And I believe it is our responsibility, and I ask your support, in giving those kids a chance.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And, you know, I didn't realize the way in which people signed up today, that I was not calling the group that I was expecting to call. And so let me modify my call for the next group and first call Kurt Widmer, Gary Fish, and Irene Furman. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Kurt Widmer. I'm the co-founder of the Good Brothers Brewing in Portland. If this group had approached you, or a group had approached this organization or lawmakers 23 years ago and suggested to you that over the next ensuing 23 years we would form an industry that would create 4,000 jobs, direct jobs, and 10,000 indirect jobs, this industry would be very clean and environmentally conscious. We recycle as an industry 97% of our solid waste. This industry would pay every tax that every other business in the state of Oregon pays, city, county, federal, TriMet. And in addition to that, this industry would pay a privilege tax on top of that. This industry would not ask nor receive tax abatements, property credits, anything else, and would be a very good citizen of the state of Oregon. And so I put it to you that if this proposal was presented to you 23 years ago, I think that you would reasonably have said, bring it on. This is going to benefit the state of Oregon in a very positive way. In fact, that's exactly what we've done. The last 11 sessions of the legislature have been nurturing sessions from our perspective. We started with enabling legislation 22 years ago, and it's been a very progressive movement since that time. The result is that Oregon is a wonderful anomaly in the world of brewing in the United States. We craft beer sales in Oregon are up more than 4 times the national average. And I think most importantly, we continue to create jobs at a very progressive rate. My company hired 41 people alone last year. I think it's important to note that manufacturing jobs are becoming a little bit scarce. I'll quote the Oregonian Friday, March 30th. Since August, Oregon manufacturers have slashed 7,300 jobs, or 3.5% of total payroll, compared to a 1% decline nationally. You've noticed that Intel, Weyerhaeuser, Freightliner have all announced layoffs. Freightliner is headquartered not too far from where my brewery is placed. We have... my brewery has a $22 million expansion underway, and when that expansion is complete, sometime about this time next year, we hope to add additional 40 positions at the brewery. I think a couple things that I want to make sure that you understand. One is why an excise tax is a very inefficient way to raise capital in the state of Oregon. We do operate in a three-tier system. We pay at the producer level. If you can assume that we would be able to pass along the 1,235% increase in its entirety to our wholesalers, they would then add their margin. They would pass it on, whatever they could, to retailers, and they would pass on then to the consumer. So it's been stated, we've used the same numbers, that per year, if there is total elasticity in beer sales, that sales wouldn't go backwards. It would, in fact, raise $60 million. That's the state's portion, and that's why I think it's important for you to understand that the Nicola Glass is only the portion that the state receives. What happens, in fact, is that there's a multiplier at the wholesaler and then at the retailer level, and that $60 million becomes, to the beer drinkers of Oregon, about $120 million. So we could see that a six-pack of our beer, which unfortunately operates at the highest nouveau, which is typically around $8, would go to $10. $4 pint would go to $6. And so it's somewhat misleading to assume that there would be no impact on sale. Representative, or Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, you asked about elasticity. We can point to the state of Alaska that took a mere 400% increase in 1996. And Dartmouth University conducted an independent study. Beer sales in that state went backwards and did not return to their former level at 8 years later at the time of that study. So there was a direct impact. And I believe you also asked, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, what the impact would be on our segment. And it is a fact that we do operate at the highest level, and beer drinkers can always trade down. Beer sales, there may be no impact on beer sales in terms of total volume, but in terms of dollars, as not being the wealthiest state, we could very easily project that people would trade down in the pricing that they're willing to pay. So I'd like my colleagues, Gary and Irene, to take it from there. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Widmer. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Gary Fish. I'm the founder and president of Deschutes Brewery over in Bend. We were founded in 1988 as a small brew pub. We've grown to become among the largest in the country. We employ about 180 people and their families at living wages, with full benefits, 401k programs, profit-sharing opportunities, etc. As I said, we originally were founded as a brew pub. As the industry grew, so did we. Sometimes it's good to be in the right place at the right time. Bend was not the bustling town that it is today back in 1988. We faced the idea of bankruptcy many, many times through that history. We grew, we built a new plant, invested millions and millions of dollars in doing that. Along the lines, our community grew as well. Our growth and that of our community went hand in hand. In 1989, we established a small golf tournament to entertain our pub customers. Today, that event, the Sagebrush Classic, stands as the most successful charity fundraiser.
Mr. Fish, we appreciate hearing the history of your business, but we are focusing on some issues today, and I would appreciate a focus on the issues. We have several more people we need to hear from today.
Then, if I may,
thank you.
Very well. I've given you copies of this, and you can see it as well. I did want to address a couple of the senator's comments from earlier, talking about the higher pricing index that our industry enjoys, some would say. I can tell you at my company, over the last 6 years, our costs have increased 5.5% a year on average. Our pricing has increased 1.5% a year on average. So as Kurt referred to, the pricing elasticity is a lot more challenging in a highly competitive marketplace than being able to pass that directly. You know, the breweries in Oregon have grew, I think, as Kurt said, because of a non-restrictive or a more favorable taxing environment. As was said earlier, that we're the lowest excise tax state in the country. I think that's inaccurate. I think we are fourth or fifth lowest. If you look at the states that are taxed lower than we are, the states of Wisconsin, Missouri, and Colorado all have one thing in mind. They're beer-producing states, and they're states that have recognized the value of these homegrown industries that provide economic as well as cultural benefit. So, With that, I think I'll go ahead and hand it over to Irene, and you have the rest of my comments in hand.
Thank you very much.
I'd be happy to take any questions at the end.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Irene Fermat. I'm the CEO and founder of Full Sail Brewing Company in Hood River. And back in 1987 when we started, I thought we just made it to the wire. We were the fourth small brewery opening in Oregon. I was a little mistaken. I think there's now 81, one of the most thriving and influential brewing communities in the nation. If you Google beer in Oregon, you get 1,380,000 hits. And it's hard to find an article that doesn't talk about Munich on the Willamette or Beervana for Oregon. I think we are a positive part of Oregon's culture, and I'm very proud of that. We've talked about the legislative wisdom of keeping the excise tax rate low, and that has been a very important source for us to both help us in our startup phases and to fuel our growth. Our current tax rate is $2.60 a barrel. The median is $5.82. The base of the revenue is 2.7 million barrels. So right now, this source raises $7 million. And I'm going to go a little off my prepared remarks because of what I've heard today. People are asking for a lot of money, and they're asking it from a very narrow source. You're looking at a source right now that's generating $7 million. What would you do? Double our tax rate? Put us right at the median? 31 states would then have a lower tax rate than we would. That's a message that you're sending to us and to so many Oregon entrepreneurs, that you want to have a business that are thriving and positive to the state of Oregon. The carve-out has also been mentioned, and the carve-out doesn't take two dynamics that I think are really critical. One is you put a cap on growth so that no Oregon brewer would want to exceed, issues that both of these gentlemen right here would be facing right now. Those 41 additional jobs would not be created. And the second one is that we do not control pricing. We cannot tell our distributor what price to charge to the retailer. We cannot tell the retailer what price to charge to the end consumer. So the distributors and retailers would likely want to spread the additional cost, and we, as the highest range, the most sensitive pricing of the beer category, would probably suffer the most in sales. I wish I believed the elasticity factor didn't exist. I personally know it does. It will affect our overall thing. In 1999, Full Sail Brewing became an employee-owned company. And as one of the parts of that process, we go through an independent appraisal every year. And he asked me, as the CEO of the company, what are the biggest obstacles I see on the horizon? Usually my answers are the competitive environment of being such a small company, dealing with global competitors, the ever-increasing costs that we have that we cannot pass through. But this year, I'm sorry to say, I had to say our biggest threat that we see is the potential of a beer tax increase up to the layer of 1,300%. And he asked me, did you put it in your cash flow projections? And I said I couldn't bear to for what that would do to our company. So I asked you, I came here 25 years ago. I'm one of those young professionals looking for the Oregon way of life. I'm very proud of having contributed with the economic impact and job performance of Full Sail. But I'm also a mom, and I'm raising two native Oregonians. That I'm also very proud of. And I'm very keen on the future of Oregon. And I'm very willing to invest in it. But any investment that focuses solely on a single industry is bound to cause so much pain to that industry and not enough gain on the other side. And so I ask you to look beyond just us to solve statewide problems. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time. Questions for this panel? Yeah, Representative Witt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask this panel, they were describing elasticity of demand, and at what level is that retail?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, from my example, the price that we charge goes to the wholesalers. They're our primary customer. So, and they're, as Irene said, they sell to the retailer who sells to the consumer. That's the three-tier system that we have in place. So when we look at our revenue line on our income statement and what we sell beer for, that's what I refer to as being able to increase pricing 1.5% to try and fit into a pricing model that gets the product to the consumer at something roughly that remains competitive within the marketplace. Meanwhile, our costs have increased on average 5.5%. Cost of raw materials, cost of glass is a huge cost center for us. And so you might, that might suggest to somebody that we're just slowly going out of business. The unnamed House bill would add today nearly $3 million a year in additional cost to us. If we were exempted from that bill, as the sponsors suggest, at our current growth rate and the growth rate we've seen for the last 19 years, between 5 and 10 years, we would reach that threshold. At that point, the 125,000 in first barrel we produce would cost us between $5 and $6 million to produce.
And if I may, that's one of the dynamics that we see when you're focusing just on a single business, that the negative impacts to us are from every angle, because a lot of money is being trying to raise off a small base.
Other questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why do you think consumers choose your products versus some of your competitors?
You mean Full Sail of the Widmer and...
I'm seeking to distinguish yours versus some of the larger producers.
Macro versus micro. Some of the larger breweries?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, I think that it's a issue of taste.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't sit here and tell you that the big breweries in this country that sell 200 million barrels make bad beer. It must be good because there's a lot of people that drink it. But I think that Oregonians, thank God, are willing to try new things. And when they try our beers, they tend to like them and they stick with them. So, and I think it's, they like to support a local product too. I think there's a lot of that. Oregonians tend to be a little bit provincial, you know, but gosh, we're selling our beers. We're all selling our beers out of the state, and mm-hmm. those are dollars that come back to the state as well. So,
I think what's interesting, what we would probably all suggest is what the more interesting question is, why do most of the consumers not purchase our beer? So.
And, of course, you will continue to ask that question, won't you?
Every day.
Yes. Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably more to staff. It appears that there probably is some additional price elasticity, which is more challenging at the top end. I'm wondering if these folks from the actual microbrewing operations don't have some better elasticity numbers that they might be able to provide us so that we can kind of take a look at that in this whole scheme of beer tax discussion, if we might.
Can you be more specific? I'm trying to figure out what...
Our economists have essentially told us that there's little or no elasticity in this situation.
Chair.
Yes? No?
No, no, no. Mr. Chair, I said there is no elasticity to me.
Ah!
Especially when it comes to Widmer.
Ah.
But for the consumers, Mr. Chair, there is elasticity. In our numbers, we do build elasticity. However, the numbers that you've seen on the House Bill 2335 do not build that elasticity because it didn't come from us.
Okay.
At the same time, they also, the source that built them explicitly said that there is no elasticity demand built into those numbers. So if I misled anybody in believing there's no elasticity, that is only an individual choice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And so one of the things I think that Representative Butler is asking is, can we actually do some work on elasticity, and perhaps our witnesses can help supply you with some information that may be useful as you work on that question. I suspect, of course, that you can also get data from other states.
We have elasticity numbers, Mr. Chair.
Alaska is a good one to look at.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Representative Witt.
If we're going to be gathering some data on elasticity, I would appreciate that if we could do it perhaps by age category, or at least those who might be under age 21 as opposed to those who might be over.
I consider that a request to our staff, and if that information is available, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today.
Mr. Chair,
while
they're leaving, I'd like to comment that I don't think that Oregonians are provincial in this arena. I think they are sophisticated and discriminating in their beer taste.
Perfect. Oh, that's
perfect.
Much better.
Yeah, I like that a little bit.
And may I add cosmopolitan? Thank you. Thank you very much. As everyone can see, we have a very significant time bind. There are many people who are left to be heard on this bill. We have another one more bill that we need to hear this afternoon briefly. I am going to ask that those who are able to return tomorrow at the same time for a continuation of the hearing, which Representative Reed will chair, because I and Representative Butler and I will be headed down south to a tour of the federal timber tax affected counties as a part of a long planned trip. And so with that, I'm giving notice now that we'll have a continuation of this hearing tomorrow, in addition to the business which is already on the calendar for tomorrow. And with that, we're going to close the hearing on the information session and also on the bills on which it was open. And we're going to open a hearing on House Bill 3045. And Mazin, would you give us a summary on that bill, please?
Mr. Chair,
and if you could take your conversations in the hall, please. We are still conducting business here. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the bill, House Bill 3045, in a very a quick description of it, it imposes a 5% fee. And that's a way it is described in the bill. However, it's probably a better description of it as a tax, and it's a tax on the gross receipts of what is termed as a short-term vehicle rentals. Also proposes that the Department of Revenue makes that collection, and the collection process will go through deducting a percent of the amounts. However, the contraption, if you will, that will be designed for the collection mechanism will be through renting licenses. So the renting company will be licensed to do that job, and by doing so, they'll start putting reports and so on into the process on page of text. The amounts of money that would come out of that 5% tax will go to the state police account, and about $13 to $15 million per biennium. That's the rough amounts that we talk about with the 5%. And just to be clear, not to be caught with something like the previous bill, not to be misunderstood about the elasticity, Mr. Chair. This tax would have what's so called. This would be a tax on tourism in a way, and tourism
and business. Out of state business, yes.
And tourism taxes are thought of to be as an export tax because they basically are exported to the outside. However, export taxes do have different ways of being described. There is the tax that you would put on products that are very specific, or what's so-called wonder type of tourism, such as places that you cannot get but that from that place. Let's say the pyramids, or that is very specific, so people would go and visit these places and pay the taxes regardless. However, there's the other tax that has a different effect. This is the for lack of a better word, the sunlust kind of tax, where you could substitute, whether it's the Bahamas or the other sunny places. Mm-hmm. They're all about how you soak sun and beach, if you will. And those the higher taxes impact those differently than they would have impacted the trip to the pyramids and so on. So on those, just to make sure to bring it to everybody's attention, we do research on elasticity very thoroughly before we do these things.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's hear from Al Elkins, Kevin Neary, and Chuck Sellers.
And Mr. Chair, so that you don't misunderstand, when I leave my home, drive to Boise, and fly to Portland and rent a car, this isn't just on the out-of-state people. This isn't just on tourism. Thank you.
Yeah, you do live in state, don't you?
I do live in
state. Not barely, but, yeah. Yes, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Al Elkins. I'm representing the Car and Truck Rental Association of Oregon. With me today is Kevin Neary, Vice President of Enterprise Rent a Car, and Chuck Sellers with the Avis Budget Group. He's the fleet manager. Mr. Chair, I have four letters here, 20 copies each from different associations. Would you like me to just read the names of the associations?
That would be wonderful, and if you have copies for us, the staff would be happy
okay.
to distribute them for you.
A letter from the Oregon Business Travel Association, a letter from the Oregon Lodging and Oregon Restaurant Association, a letter from the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association, and a letter from the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce. And I'll just give those to staff.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are here today in opposition of House Bill 3045. And Mr. Neary and Mr. Sellers will give you an overview of our industry and tell you why we are opposed to the tax.
Thank you. Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I represent the Avis Budget Car Rental Group, and I'm here today to voice our company's opposition to a bill that would impose an additional 5% tax on our customers. As we speak, I know of no other industry in Oregon whose customers are already taxed at such a high rate. Car rental customers at the Portland Airport are currently paying 22.5% in taxes and fees. This bill would increase that rate to 27.5%, which would represent one of the highest rates in our country. We are in the travel industry. Travel is good for Oregon. It's a green industry. On many, many levels, Oregon has gone to great lengths to promote travel. We think this bill is very unfriendly to travel. We believe that first impressions are lasting impressions. And if you will, we do business at the front door of our state, at the airport. As we rent cars and explain rates and charges to customers, people are angry about the current tax and fee rate. This will only get worse at a 27.5% rate. These are visitors that we want to come back and see us again and again. They bring huge revenues to our state. High tax rates will discourage this. We do customer focus groups on an annual basis, and I can tell you that one of the key items that irritate people and affect travel plans are high tax rates. It's just another irritant. It makes travel difficult. We would ask that another source be found to fund the state police. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Representative Barnard, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Kevin Neary. I'm the Vice President and General Manager with Enterprise Rent-A-Car, also here representing the Car and Truck Rental and Leasing Association of Oregon. We certainly support stable funding for the Oregon State Police, very important for public safety. However, while state government represents the cornerstone of the United States, we fully support the critical role that localities play in protecting consumer and citizen rights. But these arbitrary taxes unfairly single out our customers and potentially interfere with interstate commerce by hindering free trade in the nationwide car rental industry. In addition, the discriminatory nature of this tax, as Mr. Sellers has indicated, the 27.5% over and above the rental charge at the airport is starting to reach outlandish proportions as everybody decides to jump on the rental car industry to fund their favorite pet projects. But I also want to make the members of the committee aware that this is not simply a simple case of taxation without representation to tax visitors to our state, and they go home and we're very happy to have their money. As Representative Butler stated, this also affects Oregon citizens, and in a way perhaps not contemplated by those who put this tax together, this proposed tax. More than one-third of the rentals that take place in the state of Oregon are rented to Oregon citizens, in particular Oregon citizens whose own cars are temporarily out of service, they've been stolen, they've been wrecked, they're in the dealership for repair, and they need a replacement rental to keep about their lives. And I think the idea of telling those citizens unfortunate enough to have to pay their deductible, unfortunate enough to pay an unanticipated repair bill, also are the citizens who are singled out to have to pay for the Oregon State Police is patently unfair. And I hope you will reconsider moving this tax forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious what you mentioned a couple of different rates, the current and what would happen in the proposal. Could you help me understand how those compare to neighboring and perhaps other states?
Well, a lot of states at airports are in that nature. Chuck, do you want to speak more specifically?
There are several.
There are several states with taxes that are in the middle teens, high teens, many fewer that are in the 20% range, and only a few that would be above a 27.5.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Yeah, not to prolong, Mr. Chair, but I'm curious because I know nothing about this. The 22.5% at Portland Airport, where does that come from, and is it this uniform throughout the state? If you went to the Eugene Airport, would it be a different tax rate? Where does that 22.5% come from?
You want to speak to PDX?
Sure. At the Portland Airport, that's made up of three pieces. There's a 10% tax that goes to Multnomah County. There's a 2.5% that was tacked on a few years ago to help fund the Oregon Convention Center expansion. And there's a 10% airport concession fee that totals currently 22.5.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Yes, please.
So at Eugene, for instance, you would not have any of those?
Lane County has imposed their own 10% rental car tax, and then there's also a concession fee down there as well.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
When in the previous question, when you asked how Oregon's would compare, you were referring to statewide fees. There is no statewide fee in Oregon at this point. So this would be under this proposal, it would be a 5% statewide fee that would compare to other states' statewide fee, not to total at the rental agency fees. Am I correct in that? Because I just got back from Arizona, and it was 45%, guys, at the airport, and I was mad. Okay, and what I'm saying is I don't think Arizona has a 45% fee. I think they've done the same thing. There's an ad here, and there's an ad here, and I pay 45%. And I guess
that's exactly right.
when you said how we compare to other states, we are zero on a statewide basis, but we aren't zero to the consumer, and nor are other states. So I guess that would be more of interest if we were to pursue this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And they may not have the answer, our staff may. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
One other quick one, then. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about renting a car at a facility that's not at an airport? It's just the county, and you would lose the 10% from the airport one, right? It would be
that's
down
correct.
That much further?
That's right. You would have to pay any of the county fees that have been imposed, plus this proposed tax as well.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know what is the percentage of car rentals that take place at the airport versus at other locations?
Well, it's difficult to have it exact due to competitive nature of the business, but we've estimated more than one-third of the rentals in the state, and I could probably make a case for close to half of the rentals that take place in the state of Oregon take place away from the airports and are rented to folks whose cars are out of service.
So a follow-up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Please.
So we have been provided, I don't know where it came from, this chart that shows state-by-state car rental taxes. Where did you get
this? This is presented from the staff.
Please.
So this shows Oregon at zero, along with, I think, maybe one or two other states in the country. And then all the other states range from a combined total of 16 down to, it looks like, you know, a middle range of somewhere around 8.
I imagine those are statewide taxes.
Right. So what about I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please, go ahead.
I mean, what do you say to the two-thirds of these rentals that are happening not at the airport and that are being taxed at the zero rate versus what other states are doing?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, just to clarify, Mr. Chair, it looks like people are paying zero statewide here, whereas in almost every other state in the country, they're paying somewhere, you know, between 8% and 16%.
I would venture that most of those taxes from other states are part of a statewide sales tax scheme that Oregon has considered.
And let's inquire about that. Do these include retail sales taxes, or
Mr. Chair, the ones that do are specified that they are. And the ones that are a rental rate on their own would be the third column from your left.
and then they combine at the end of the last okay. column.
The second column of numbers is the sales tax rate for that state.
Right.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, that is true. This is statewide. Oregon has only Multnomah County, and including the airport and everything, we think Multnomah County accounts for almost 90% of all
rentals, car rentals. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Okay, so the fact that we don't have a statewide one, it may be less significant than the fact that Multnomah County has 12.5% plus the local airport fee. Thank you. Isn't that this? It's not the same.
Since the airport's in Multnomah County, I would assume that's probably a big percentage of Multnomah County, right?
Right. Well, and you indicated that 90% are in Multnomah County, 90% of the rentals occur in Multnomah County. Is that right? Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it. Mr. Fuller, Mr. Gardner.
90%.
And those of us who are left are now missing other committees, so if you can be expeditious, we would appreciate it.
As succinct as possible. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, and I'm appearing today for Hertz. I'm not going to go over the same points that the prior panel went over, but except to emphasize that a major proportion, and we think it's closer to 50%, currently of car rentals are for use by Oregonians, not tourists or out-of-state people here on business trips, but Oregonians. So this is a tax that.
So this is only a half perfect tax.
Well, that's it. I guess that would be a good way to describe it.
Thank you.
What I want to talk about briefly an issue that I've been involved with since I was a member of this august body, and that began in 1979. And as a member of the Senate, I voted for a measure, SJR 7, which had, as it turned out, perhaps an unwise effect of taking the state police out of the highway fund. Seemed a good idea at the time, but it has certainly, over the years, put a severe pressure on the state police budgets. But that was at the time, a carefully thought out and carefully worded provision. And I'm going to read just a quick segment from Article 9, Section 3A, which is the dedication provision.
Is that related to the bill that's in front of us?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The bill having to do with the rental.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. And it the dedication to the highway fund includes the following: any tax or excise levied on the ownership, operation, and use of motor vehicles. Now, if you look at the bill in Section 2, it says there is imposed and shall be collected a fee for the privilege of engaging in short-term vehicle rental operations. The fee should be 5% of the gross receipts from each short-term vehicle rental. Whether it is cosmetically labeled as a privilege tax, a sales tax, an excise tax, in my view, that tax falls squarely within Article 9, Section 3A, specifically the provision dedicating taxes or excises levied on the ownership, operation, or use of motor vehicles.
And that would be dedicated to the highway fund.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. A number of auto dealers do have rental operations that have nothing to do with tourism. We believe that user tax ought to have a close connection to what is being taxed, and we're not aware that people who rent cars are in need of the police more often than people who have cars that they have not rented. And without some sort of connection to car rental people needing more police services than other people, we don't believe there's a necessary connection between the two. Thank you for your time.
That's very quick and short. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to close the public hearing, and the committee is adjourned. Thank you.